हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
In the Mundaka Upanishad 1-10, it is said, thinking material pious deeds the best of all actions, and affirming that no other action is better than them, fools go to swarga, enjoy, and then again return to this world or the worlds beneath it. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality declares, Dvayate vishayan pumsha, sangaste shupajayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kamat krodo vijayate. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. Krodad bhavati sammohas, sammohat smriti vibhramaha, smriti bhramshad buddhinasho, buddhinashat pranasati. From anger, delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Okay, so there's bewilderment. The jiva's bewilderment is why he's in the material world. So this is just bringing out another aspect why they're not the same as Krishna. Because right? the impersonalists are trying to say that the jiva and the Lord are the same because of the term amsha. Right? But here then it's being pointed out that no, Krishna is above. He comes. And even though he may only manifest part of his potency, he's still the controller of the material energy. Well, the living entity is controlled by the living entity. So how are they controlled? Through their desire. In his commentary on these words, Sri Shankaracharya explains, Sarvan artasya mulam uktam vishaya bhidhyanam. Here it is said that contemplation of sense objects is the root of all that is undesirable. In Bhagavad Gita 4.9, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo vedi tattvataha, chaktva deham punar janma naitimam eti sorjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. In Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, Ashvattam enam su vridha mulam asanga shastrena dridhena chitva tatah padam tat parimar gita vyam yasmin gata na nivartanti bhuyaha. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this tree with a weapon of detachment. So doing must seek that place from which, having gone, once gone, one never returns. In Bhagavad Gita 15.6, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, Natad bhashyate suryo na shashanko na pavaka, nagatva na nivartante taddhama paramam mama. That abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or moon, nor by electricity. One who reaches it never returns to this material world. Tattva Sutra 3.27. So the living entity, by their desire, they come to the material world, right? By contemplating the objects of the senses, they get entangled, right? So they think that the material opportunities that are there and the experiences there will actually bring them happiness. You know, as mentioned here, thinking material pious deeds, the best of all actions. So they think that's the best. They don't actually understand that bhakti is the best. So that's the difference between the karmi and the devotee, is that the devotee understands bhakti is the best. Whatever is done in bhakti, that includes whatever you're gaining in the religious principles. Right? Because the religious principles are to elevate you. Right? And in elevation, where to elevate you. So the karmis, they elevate themselves only up to the heavenly planets. The jnanis up to liberation. But the devotees, too, back to the spiritual realm. So it's just a matter of how inclusive you think it is. So the point is they will be convinced that by following pious activities, the experience you'll get from your senses and mind will include whatever you would get from sinful. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You perform sinful activities, the idea is you'll get some supposedly good experience. Right? But, so someone who's pious is convinced that, no, the pious activities already includes whatever you have there and more. Right? Well, the jnani is convinced that going for liberation, that includes whatever happiness would be there in the heavenly planets, but beyond that, it's more. And the devotee, he understands that the devotional service already includes whatever benefits are there in the lower and beyond. Right. Yes.
What would be the reason that previously devotees would be convinced about this point, but now not so much?
It's just a matter of understanding this aspect of primary and secondary. It means technically the devotees may not have understood so much about the primary and secondary because they didn't really know much about secondary. You know, whatever they had from before, but it wasn't necessarily taken as useful. It would have been taken as just, it was, you know, Maya, or they just didn't have much experience. So they had that focus on Krishna. So they were focused on the primary, and so just by the process, as it was mentioning, you know, in the Bhagavatam verses, that even if you don't know the process, right? No, it's like giving an example of like the gopis, that they don't know technically all the mechanics of the tattva, but because they're absorbed in Krishna, the benefit is there. That's the perfection of devotional service. Like jnana, you don't know the knowledge, you don't get any benefit. You know? It just doesn't work. Karma, you don't perform the action and get the result, you don't get any benefit. But in bhakti, you just have that absorption in Krishna, you're already getting benefit. And then wherever you're applying it through the medium, you're already getting the benefit of that, even if it's not perfect. The devotee's getting liberated from whatever little understanding they have, you know, like that, and from their activities, they're, you know, getting all facilities. Does that make sense? So, they're absorbed in that primary aspect. They have faith in that. So that's actually firm faith. That's what will remove the anarthas. But due to a lack of, let's say, cultural training and all that, because you have to start somewhere. So if you're going to start with somewhere, you start with the essence, which is bhakti. And because if you catch bhakti, everything else will come. It'll all come along with it. So then... But if you try to make everybody cultured, you may not get the bhakti. And the problem is you may not get people to culture, because you can only get someone to culture if they have the propensity. Right? You know, of course, you have Pygmalion and that whole theory there. You know Pygmalion? Yeah? My Fair Lady? No? Okay. So, the idea is that you can't take something that doesn't have the potential and make it into something. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a matter of what ingredient you have, you can make something with that has those ingredients. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like I have a cauliflower, I can make a sabji, I can't make a car. Right? It's just the way it works. Right. So you start with that, and then because of devotional service, then you're bringing out the qualities of the soul. Then you can see all these good qualities, even though on the material platform they don't have them. So it's actually the only way to approach it. Mm-hmm. So that's what Prabhupada's doing. Now, with time, some devotees start feeling that the devotees aren't as cultured as they would like them to be, you know, and then the elements of the prestige and this, you know, the secondary aspects. So then the focus starts to shift to that. But in shifting to that, because we mentioned it's not really understood about the primary and secondary, so it's kind of like the ideas that I'm a devotee, I do devotional service, so therefore anything I do is devotional service. That's the logic being used. So then the problem comes up is that if you're dealing with the direct activities, then whether you're conscious or not, it works directly. But if you're dealing with the indirect, if you're conscious, it'll work as under yoga maya. If you're not conscious, it'll work under mahamaya. It's not that it's inherently spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole idea, is that when you shift to the secondary, you actually have to know more. That's why you see is that in the Bhagavad, it's just that surrender to Krishna. In the Pancharatra, you add more understanding. But when you get into Vedic, that's where the maximum knowledge of the secondary is. So as we work with the secondary, then you have to use that knowledge. And to use the modern knowledge is always going to be inefficient, because it's based on the experiences and the endeavors and desires of those with the four defects. So they're never going to get the result that's stated. Because if it was, have not from the time of the Greeks, didn't they want to be nice guys that had a wonderful society that everything worked nicely in? Right? Where are they? Where is it working? It's not working. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is all those things that were, how do you say it? You know, many things that are today are considered new and modern and all that. The Greeks were already living like that, you know, thousands of years ago. But it didn't work. And then it shifted into the Roman, which was a little bit, you know, more conservative on the things and all that. And that worked in certain ways. And then it went all over the place. So the point is that it doesn't work. Only when you follow those who are the transcendental, who are transcendental, then it actually works. Does that make sense? So, if we don't see things, how they're connected to Krishna, we can't just say it is because I'm a devotee and because I'm doing it, therefore it's transcendental. That's not actually good enough. One has to be able to actually yourself appreciate how it's transcendental. How does it connect? So that means you have to have the faith that by connecting something to bhakti, you get all the benefits. The bhakti is the real thing. But if one has the idea that the material things will give you benefit, then that faith won't be there. And then the problem is then those anarthas won't go away. So as you cultivate that indirect aspect, you're cultivating the anarthas at the same time. Well, if you have that faith that, no, bhakti includes everything else, then even you're dealing with engaging those anarthas, the anarthas are going away. So that's would be what's happening. So you see, those who maintain that faith, then they're moving along and they just continued very smoothly from whatever it was before into now. But you see, for many, then there's kind of like a dynamic, you know, you could say religious shift. Philosophically is there. That doesn't change. But the religious aspect changes. It takes on a sentimental aspect, because their religion and philosophy don't match. They have a religion, they have a philosophy, but they're not connected. So the philosophy that they have, doesn't have the religion to apply it. Therefore, there's mental speculation, right? And at the same time as a religion they're following, it doesn't have a philosophy. Therefore, it's just sentiment. So they sentimentally apply one and then speculate about the other. Does that work? Yeah, so that's the difficulty. Is that one always tries to see that they match. It's the way that's what you do in everything. Let us say you're going to go out for you know, some serious shopping, you know, for cooking and that, you know, relatives are coming over, you know, let's say for, you know, for the weekend and all that. You're going to do some. So do you take the Ferrari? Especially this new one, I forget what it's called. It only has one seat. You know, you don't take that. That's what you take after you get fed up when the Rellos are there driving you nuts. Then you get in that one. It's because it's only got one seat. No one can come with you. Then you go out driving. Right? So you take the, you know, you take something that's, you know, got space. Right? You know what I'm saying? So, like that, or you're cooking. You want to fry something, use a frying pan. You want to boil it, use, you know, a pan with sides on it. You know what I'm saying? You want the water to stay in, you have a pot with no holes in it. You want the water to go out, you have a pot that's full of holes. Like that, it's straightforward. So therefore, the philosophy and religion should match, especially since they're given to us matching. Then we would use it like that. But due to lack of understanding, then we don't see the need of that because of our, you know, our aphorism or the sutra, you know, of I'm a devotee, I do devotional service, so anything I do is devotional service. Yes. Right? So that's a problem.
That's poor logic.
It's poor logic, but you see it's the standard thing. Because you say yukta vairagya, oh, you don't use cars, you don't use planes. Yeah, but what has that got to do with yukta vairagya? You know? You know, it's like saying, why are we eating? You don't use a fork? You don't use a spoon? It's kind of like, what are you talking about? Because yukta vairagya means you're connecting it to Krishna. Just because I use a car doesn't mean I'm connecting it to Krishna. And just because I'm using a car doesn't mean I'm not attached. So how is that yukta vairagya? That becomes the difficulty, is that we have this basis and these aphorisms, and we don't actually think about them. You know, I forget who was mentioning. Maybe Krishna was mentioning that the living entities who are attached, they without thinking, they just accept their ideas. They just have an attachment and just accept that it's there. So if anyone can give a little philosophy on why it is, great, but no one thinks about it further. It means, in other words, no one brings it up, you won't think about it. If someone brings it up, you find just enough to make it so the problem goes away. But you don't actually want to solve the problem. So that's the difficulty. That's why the idea is to be thoughtful. Is that something? So then one can analyze and all that. So let us say, just to be absorbed in Krishna, then that's good. Right? So one doesn't need all the technical points like that. But the thing is if we're absorbed in Krishna, that would already be there. Right? So therefore, then, there's a course of study to take us up through the process so that we start to become thoughtful. Not that thoughtful is the goal. No, being absorbed in Krishna is the goal. But you can only be absorbed in Krishna if you're thinking. Right? You know, Prabhupada says, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So all this technical kind of analysis makes us conscious. Not that we're trying to become scholars. That's the last thing we want to do. But the point is we want to become thoughtful. We want to become aware. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah. You had some? Yes.
So nowadays, sincere preachers, they have two basic approaches. One is that they start with indirect and bring people to the direct.
Right.
And the others, they start from direct and, you know, whenever it's possible, then they
get
to
indirect.
The indirect.
Right.
So is it time, place, and circumstances, audience? What it depends on?
Yes. Well, you could put the basic principle. Means it would be like you said, type, place, circumstance, all these different things, who you're dealing with. But you could say is you could basically make it into two categories. If they have faith, you start with the direct. And then you apply the explanation of the indirect, how far is necessary for them to be able to use it. Mm-hmm. If you're starting with those that don't have faith, then you start from the indirect. And because they have faith in the indirect, you show logically how then the direct is the actual thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like yesterday you were saying about the points. Do they bring out the Siddhanta first, or and then afterwards deal with the argument, or deal with the argument first, then the Siddhanta? It depends upon the person. Because if I bring the Siddhanta with someone who doesn't have faith in it, they won't accept that. I have to show logically the steps, then conclude with it. But if you have someone who has faith and wants to be able to apply it, you start with the essence, then you expand. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, but one has to be aware is that that expansion is necessary. How much it's necessary. It means if by explaining the direct someone's fully absorbed, then there's no need of more. You know, it's just like, let's say, with the gopis, Uddhava doesn't explain more. It's just Krishna's there. He said that I am everything, everything's in me. Therefore, by always being absorbed, you know, seeing him in everything, then you'll always be absorbed in him. He doesn't have to get into more technical detail. Right, because the faith is just accepted, and so they're able to apply it because of that absorption in Krishna. Because the key, the catalyst, actually is the Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Right, and you see, the material existence, the catalyst is the false ego. Remember, in the glance of the Lord, that's Sadashiva.
Yeah.
And so then, because Pradhan, as soon as you add false ego, then it starts to work. And then in the Sringa Purana, it mentions that each time you add false ego, it expands again. Right? So you get ether, you add false ego, you get air. You add false ego, you get fire. You add false ego, you get water, like this. It just keeps going. So the more false, that's why the body, which is, you know, we're looking at the earth element.
Yes.
Right? So that's where the grossest false ego is in the body and that which is connected to the body. You know, as it goes back more subtle, it gets less. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, for the catalyst for the spiritual is remembering Krishna. So you remember Krishna, then it all works. It doesn't require logic and all that. Because the point is, if you understand, you don't need logic to get there. If you don't understand, that's where you use logic. Hanuman's for trying to connect Shabda and Pratyaksha. But if from hearing Shabda you can see it in Pratyaksha, why do you need Hanuman? Right? Without Hanuman, you're not going to be called a scholar. Therefore, the gopis are not called scholars. But the point is with that understanding, if they do apply it in Hanuman, there's no greater scholars than them. It means literally. You know what I'm saying? Kalidas, all those guys, they're big. They're nice. You know, Varahamira and Shanai, they're all good. But not like the gopis.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Does that make sense? So the whole point is if it's accepted, but you have to be prepared for if there's an area where they don't know how to apply, you have to be able to show the connection between the primary and the secondary. Right? But at the same time, as they're using the other method, you're dealing with the secondary and using logic, then unless you can show the connection to Krishna, what's the point of so much nice logic? Yeah. So both are going to be done. It's just a matter of which one. So in one area, they might have that faith. You can start with Siddhanta and go into the detail. Another area, you have to go through the steps and then get to, you know. Or they've heard the Siddhanta and all that, and so but now they want to know how to apply it in a specific area. So therefore, then they're asking. And then you have to show how it comes down. Right? The one sense of using the ascending, it appears that you're using it because you're going through the logic, get to the Siddhanta.
Yeah.
But you're not actually using it because all the things are coming down. But the other one where they have the faith, you just show how it comes down. And you only come down as far as you need. That's the meaning of as much as necessary. We think it's volume. No, it's how far down into the layers of material energy you have to come. It's not volume. You know, because you can't say, oh, the mouse is better than the elephant because the mouse, you know, has a smaller place, eats less. And the elephant eats more, has a bigger house. That's not how we look at it. We look at it on how many layers you have to come down. Right, so if you can function on the Bhagavad, then you do. why you would do anything else. Right? Then, but you know, it means you can do for preaching, but I'm saying for your own development. If need be, Pancharatra is there. Right? And then if need be, you're dealing with more things, you have the Vedic. But even the Vedic, you start from the essence, is about pleasing Krishna, and then go out into the mechanics and how those give results that please Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what you're looking at.
Maharaj, it seems that the desire to be the controller and the enjoyer manifests from the soul itself, whereas desires for the varieties of material enjoyment are just combinations of modes in the mind and we misidentify. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. But the point is you, since the desire is there, it has to be manifest. Hence, then, under the modes, then you go through a particular path. Mm-hmm. You know, you have choice at any moment. You can change that, but generally no one does. You know, it's just like, let's say you get, for the theme park, you get a pass for, let's say, 5 rides. Right? You don't have to go on any of the rides. Or after the first ride, you could stop. But generally, if you got for 5, you will go on all 5 rides.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. But you have free will. You don't have to. You know, it's not as soon as you buy the ticket, then 2 guys come out, you know, with suits and those little things in their ears and follow you around and make sure you go to all the things. Right? No, it doesn't happen.
Yes. So the free will remains.
Yeah, free will always remains. So that's why then one can give up. That's why it says give up material desire. It's actually meaning give up this desire to control and enjoy. We generally take it because we don't see that as the specific way I want to control and enjoy. And which is fine. That means that has to be given up also. So by giving up in general, that goes away. But if not, then if you give up, start there, at least you've started the process, and then you start going back. It's however it works. Mm-hmm. That's the point, is that the Vedic path will work however you use it. Mm-hmm. But you have to use it according to authority. Without authority, it won't work. Is there?
Yes, thank you, Mark.
Good? Okay.
So, Maharaj, can we say that if we understand that we don't understand fully the thing?
Yes, if we understand, we do not understand.
Yes. So the solution is to go back to the Acharya.
Yes, to approach authority. Like we saw, is that Krishna was pointing out from 11th canto and then from so many other places that the surrender to the Acharya, that's what makes the system work. By serving the devotees, that's what attracts Krishna's attention. All the other technical things you do, Krishna couldn't care less. We go to the management course, and we're the big manager. Krishna couldn't care less. He just has a desire, and the material energy carries it out. Now, is that good management, or is that good management? Right? You know, it said that you're a good manager. You get everything done. You follow up. But a better manager is the one who can get others to do it. And he just follows up on them. So what is the management where all you do is have a desire and it's taken care of? You know, what is the quality of those servants that know exactly what you want and how to get it done? So he's going to care for our management? Especially when we get it from Malechas and Yavanas? You know, not that we can't take it from there. We can take gold from a dirty place. But we have to remember, if it works, it's only because it's following the laws of nature that Krishna gave. So therefore, why not take it back and give Krishna the credit? Yeah. Does that make sense? Okay. Summary of Adhikarna 17. Vishaya. Having completed the digression, the author considers the main topic of the jiva. Such statements as the following are found in the Upanishads, like katha. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yovi dadhati kaman. The Lord is the chief eternal among eternals, and the chief conscious being among conscious beings. The one fulfills the destiny of many. Katha Upanishad 2.1.13. In this passage, it says there are many jivas with eternal consciousness. Shamshaya, so doubt. Are all of the jivas same in their experience? Purva Paksha. Because no differences are recognized, all jivas are the same. Siddhanta, the sutra card gives the conclusion as follows. Sutra 2349. Adrishta Niyamat. Adrishta of fate. Ani Yamat, because of difference. All jivas are not the same because of differences in karma. Sutra Prakashika. The sutra card explains that all jivas have the same sarup, but differ in their individual adrishta karmas, unseen fate. Hence, all jivas are not the same. Later in Vedanta Sutra 318, Kriyat Yaye Nu Shayavan Drishta Smriti Bhyam. It is explained that a person dedicated to pious karmas attains swarga and returns with the remainder of karmas. Right? It's just like when you go buy something, you return with some change.
Yes.
Right? You know, like that. It means you can't buy something with nothing. So you can get however close you can, and then you'll have change. So that's why when they come down from the heavenly planets, generally then they take birth in, you know, aristocratic, rich families, these kind of nice families that have some facility. So they still have a little bit of karma left that'll put them in that, but not enough to keep them in the heavenly planets.
Mark?
Yes?
What would be the benefit for them to claim that the jivas all have the same experience?
Because then everything's the same. Because we're trying to say everything's all one. So we're going by the external, right? Because their philosophy is all external, basically. It takes some support from the internal, or the subtle, like that. But it's external in that we have a body, you know, and with that body we perform activities in the field of action. From that we're suffering. So the suffering is coming from engaging the body in those material desires. So therefore, if we get rid of this material body and all desires, then there'll be nothing, and then we won't suffer. Right? So it's a Buddhist concept, is that you're suffering, get rid of everything, then there'll be no suffering. It's kind of like anarchy. You know, if you get rid of everything, then somehow or another, everything will be nice. But it never is, because there's always something. There's no such thing as nothing. Right? Is that... Okay. So... yes. So then using this kind of external kind of idea, because it works on people, therefore then you're saying if the jivas are all one and everything's the same, then we merge into the one and it's all one and everything's one and like that. You know, so their buzzword is one. Like that. Work that in and it's good. You know, to some extent, you know. Yes.
Is this Purva Paksha saying that there's one jiva just manifesting many, or
no? It's Brahman manifest as many. So whether it's Brahman is cut up into pieces and therefore there's many, or it's like a reflection in the water and that way then there's many. But in any case, it's all Brahman. So they're trying to bring out the oneness, because if you can get the oneness on this, then you get the oneness there. You know, so therefore then there's the oneness between the broccoli sabji and my shoe, because it's all one. So I'll eat the broccoli and my body can chew on the shoe. Devotees would do that many times if people start spousing, what do you call it? Mayavad philosophy. They say, give me your wallet. You know, and they give the wallet. And then you take money out. You know, and enough to, you know, catch the guy's attention, you know. And then say, well, you know, you are me and I am you, so this wallet's mine, so I'm just taking my money and then handing the wallet back. You know, of course, they give them books to go with it, you know, so, you know, if they want Krishna books, $20 or something, they give them the Krishna book, you know, so they get it, you know, so. But the point is that they would use that against them.
Gurudas Prabhu explained a good one in his book that, he was in a room somewhere here in India, it may have been Kumbh, sharing a room with someone, and this person was espousing Mayavad philosophy. It's all one. So they had a blanket, pulled one thread out of the blanket, And the man said, yes, the blanket and the thread from the blanket are one. So he took his blanket away from him and gave him the thread. Sleep with that tonight. And it was cold. And the fellow in the middle of the night came to him and said, yes, Guruji, I understand now. You have convinced me.
And he took his blanket back. Yes, it's practical. So that's the point, is that even though technically they don't know all technical philosophy, but because they're convinced of this point, they can convince others. Because if you're convinced, you can convince others. I mean, there was another thing where I think it was the biggest Mayavadi in Sri Lanka. He was Tamil. You know, he would have been the Tamil community. And he used to come back and forth, and he'd come over and preach also in India. So somehow or another, Hansaduda Maharaj, then he met him. And I think I might have been televised like that. And he defeated him. And he was the biggest. Like that, because of their commitment to what Prabhupada gave and this, and they just won't budge from it. You know, so it's just, that's the point, is that you don't have to be a scholar. You have to be a devotee. So if you think, I need to be better at presenting Krishna consciousness. So it's not that I should study logic. No, it's I should become a better devotee. Then if you study logic, yeah, you could use it. But it's only if you're a better devotee can you use it. It's just like, let's say I go into the kitchen. I don't know anything. And I cook bad. So therefore, then my determination is to go out and buy the best quality pots there are. And then I'll be a better cook. No, you have to learn cooking. Then even if you don't, if it's the same kitchen, same pots as knowing cooking, you'll cook better. Now if you have the tools better, then you can do it very nice. But the key is actually devotion. It's not the scholarship and the knowledge and the this and that, and don't do any service, just lock yourself in the room and study all day and then you'll be a preacher. No, you'll never be. Like that. Is that?
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. It is explained that a person dedicated to pious karmas attains swarga and returns with the remainder of karmas. Further in Vedanta Sutra 3.1.14, samyamane tvanu bhuye taresham aro ha varo hao tadgati darshanat. It is explained that by the performance of sinful karmas, one goes to Yama's abode and experiences suffering. Hence, it is rightly verified that jivas differ based on their karmas. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta, the word na is understood from Sutra 2.3.44. The jivas are not all the same in their experience. Why not? Though their sarup is the same, they are not the same because they are having different karmas. Their karma, adrishtam, is without beginning, anadi. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.31. Right? So without their karma, adrishtam is without beginning. So he mentioned it happens from when they're situated in the spiritual platform, because there's no time there. So you can't say it began at this time. It started in eternity. Right? Then they're transferred here where there is time. But there's no time.
It seems like they do not believe in the concept of karmas.
They don't care about karmas, because their idea is that the jnana goes beyond the karma, because you're doing naishkarmya. So they're not worried about karma. They're just performing those activities that are good for liberation, so that detachment and those things. Mm-hmm. So they're not worried about karma. While the karmis are worried about karma, hence the name karmi. Mm-hmm. Right? The karmi is one who performs karma. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's just a matter of your values.
Inherent in their philosophy is that all karma is illusion.
Yes. So they don't even worry about it. So since it's illusion, they don't worry about it. But then if that's the thing, is the jiva is also illusion according to their philosophy, why are they worried about it? Why do they care that they're Narayan? You're just an illusion, so why should I care? I could call you a dill pickle, you know, it's like that. You know. And suddenly he says, why do I have to call them Narayan? Because everything's Narayan, so is that. So is my shoe. You know? Yeah, like that. Them and the shoe are non-different, right? The shoe you're wearing are those, you know, kind that are meant for wearing on a boat, right? The sailors that wear those kind like that. So therefore it's a crock. Right? So therefore his philosophy is a crock. It's all non-different. It's all one. Yes? Well, it works. Doesn't it work?
So all the time believe in karmas. They perform karmas for attaining. They don't believe in karmas.
Yes.
But they perform karmas so that they attain their process. The
book. Yes, because you have to. Nice karma means you have to be doing some karma. Mm. But you know, it's just that. It's very. What do you call it? Arbitrary. Because you just take what you want, and then you get six main philosophies due to this arbitrariness. But it's standard arbitrariness because it's controlled by the mode. So depending upon the particular combination, you get these six philosophies. Like that. And then from that you can get derivatives. Right? You know, it's like a recipe. Any recipe you have, you can get derivatives of that. And variations. So in the same way as you have six philosophies that everything's based in. And then from that, then you get all the other variety, whatever you can think. The sky is the limit. Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. The living entity is exactly like a dog who, overcome with hunger, goes from door to door for some food. According to his destiny, he sometimes receives punishment and is driven out, and other times receives a little food to eat. Technically, this is the meaning of dog's dinner. Right? Sometimes it becomes used in a different way. I can't remember. The other day I saw it used in a completely different method. You know, meaning that it's not necessarily... I forget what it is. But dog's dinner means you might get something, you might not. It's not stable. Mm-hmm. Right? Similarly, the living entity, being influenced by so many desires, wanders in different species of life according to destiny. Sometimes he is high, and sometimes he is low. Sometimes he goes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to hell, sometimes to the middle planets, and so on. Footnote 86. Srila Prabhupada comments. The living entity's position is herein likened to a dog's. By chance, a dog may have a very, very rich owner, and by chance it may become a street dog. As the dog of a rich man, he will live very opulently. Sometimes in Western countries, we hear of a master leaving millions of dollars to a dog in his will. Of course, there are many dogs loitering in the street without food. Therefore, to liken the conditional existence of the living entity to that of a dog is very appropriate. An intelligent human being, therefore, can understand that if he has the life of a dog, he had best become Krishna's dog. Right? If that's what it is, depending on the master, or no, then have Krishna as the master. In the material world, a dog is sometimes elevated and is sometimes on the street, but in the spiritual world, Krishna's dog is perpetually, eternally happy. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is therefore sung, Vaishnava Thakur, Tomara Kukur, Balia, Janaha More. In this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur offers to become a Vaishnava's dog. The dog always keeps himself at the master's door and does not allow any person unfavorable to the master to enter. Similarly, one should engage in the service of a Vaishnava and try to please him in every respect. Unless one does so, he does not make spiritual advancement. It makes it difficult, or, you know, it's slow. It probably says, unless one does so, he does not make any spiritual advancement. It's an absolute statement. Krishna also says, that's the only thing that attracts him. Right? So that, you could also say, is another aspect, is that the focus was on Srila Prabhupada, and so then this aspect was there, so it was very strong. But as it started to shift, some shifted with it, some didn't.
Yes.
Right? And those that didn't, they always tried to influence the ones that did, that it's not so important. Yes. So with that, then naturally, instead, if it's not about the spiritual master, not about the Vaishnavas, then you start to shift it into the trappings. So at the beginning it'll be more devotional trappings, but with time it'll just get to any trapping. You know. What's that? As confirmed, apart from spiritual advancement, in the material world, if one does not develop his qualities and goodness, he cannot be promoted to the higher planetary system. So, apart from the spiritual, being, it means promoted to the spiritual realm. On the material platform, unless you develop goodness, you don't actually get good facility. Like that. Because the heavenly planets, that's really nicely set, you get there. But if not, then you get nice facilities. This is only from goodness. So this whole idea is that we're going to get facilities from modern methods. That doesn't work. It's only by being goodness, then these things are there. You understand? And the point is, one in goodness, he's not worried about it. He's focused on doing the duty. These come as a side effect. Does that make sense? Yeah. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 1:4:18, Urdvam gacchati, gacchanti satvastha madhye tishtanti rajasaha. Jaganya guna vritistha adho gacchanti tamasaha. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. Right, because if you're dealing with the passion means that goodness aspect is accepted, but you're doing it for a motive. Goodness means you're doing it because it should be done. So those who can do things because they should be done, then they'll go to the heavenly planets. Those that it's mixed will come to the earthly planets. And those in ignorance, then they'll go to the lower planets because there's no interest in the higher principle. All it is that you follow the Vedic culture simply because of the material benefit you'll get from it. So in the lower planets, they will follow, you know, to some degree, wherever areas like that they do. Does that make sense? But they're in ignorance because they don't see the connection to the higher principles and to Krishna. While the demigods do, and the human beings can go either way. There are many varieties of life in the different planetary systems, and these come about due to the living entities developing his qualities in goodness, passion, and ignorance. If one is in goodness, he is promoted to the higher systems. If in passion, he remains in the middle systems. If in ignorance, he is pushed down to the lower species of life. Oh, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29-32-31. Okay, that's all on this page. Okay. Sutra 2:350. Abhi sandhya drishvapi chaivam. Adhi sandhya, inclinations. Adishu, beginning with. Api, also. Cha, and. Avam, thus. Though desires and some temporary differences may be accepted as a cause, they must also have a cause. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar explains that differences in jiva occur primarily due to adrishta karma, unseen fate, which in turn is the cause for desire. Sri Govinda Bhashya. Siddhanta. Though the desires and hatreds are accepted as causes for varieties in jivas, api, these desires and hatreds arise from karma alone. Since one must find a cause of those desires and hatreds, avam. The word cha indicates this includes the temporary differences as well. So for the jivas, that we're pointing out this difference of the karmas, but that's just coming since the karmas are there. You have the you have a karma, therefore you have a natural inclination. Right? Let's say you have a karma, you have money, then the natural inclination is to use that money. So whatever the karma, then you're going to function according to that. So we're pointing out that it's coming from the karma and this and that, but its point is the individual is there, because we don't want to put too much focus on the karma, because that's still not the jiva, because we're talking about the jiva, not about the karma and their material entanglement. Bhagavatam verse reference. The fruit of activities a living entity, living being performs, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for the fulfillment of his desires. The unseen cause is the root for the living entity's different bodies. Because of his intense desire, the living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body which is either like that of his mother or like that of his father. The gross and subtle bodies are created according to his desire. But depending upon the mood and all that, then they're going to take on that particular form. Right? So they'll have some aspect from there. You know, it's always like, oh, they have the... you know, the mother's eyes, or they have the father's chin, or, you know, that kind of, right?
Yes.
No? That kind of jazz, yeah. So that's what we're talking about. So, and you'll see is that body is bodies for expressing in nature, and so then they'll have those kind of aspects of nature that is there, that is similar with the parents. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.151. When a fire, for some unseen reason, leaps over one piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Like, that's why you see after a forest fire, there are a few trees left standing.
Yes.
It's just destiny. That tree's supposed to not get burned. Mm-hmm. So the fire just goes around. Similarly, when a living entity accepts one kind of body and leaves aside another, there's no reason other than unseen destiny. Footnote 87. Srila Prabhupada comments. When there is a fire in a village, the fire sometimes jumps over one house and burns another. Similarly, when there is a forest fire, the fire sometimes jumps over one tree and catches another. Why this happens, no one can say. One may set forth some imaginary reason why the nearest tree or house did not catch fire, whereas a tree or house in a distant place did. But actually, the reason is destiny. This reason also applies to the transmigration of the soul, by which a prime minister in one life may become a dog in the next. We're not pointing any fingers here. The work of unseen destiny cannot be ascertained by practical experimental knowledge. And therefore, one must be satisfied by reasoning that everything is done by Supreme Providence. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.151. So we see the thing, we see the logic, we have to accept. Because there's things that are just beyond what we're dealing with. So we don't know. Like that. We can't logically say, oh, because this tree is here and the wind was blowing that. Well, why was the wind blowing that? The wind can blow any direction it likes. You know, the forest fire is going along, the wind's blowing in one way to get it under control, and then the wind changes and it goes in a different direction. Or it's blowing in the wrong way, they're fighting it, they don't know what to do, and then it switches and then it goes out. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's the way it's destiny is doing that. It's the previous karma. Mm-hmm. Right? And the karma is so expertly managed that all those trees and all those firefighters and all those villagers, they're all together in that one spot. Right? And so therefore then they get that karma, it's all taken care of together. Right? Means if you're such a big manager, do you do one thing at a time? No, you do many things at once. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's what do you call it? You have to go to the other city to sign the contract, but while you're there in that city, you can pick something up while you're there. You know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just, you get things done. Sutra 2351. Purvapaksha, so the doubt. Is it not so that these differences are created by differing environments, such as the environment of Swargaloka, the earth, and other places? Right. So he's saying just because you're there, but it doesn't explain why they're there. Right? Because this will come up, the Christians will say this. He's just born there. But why is he born there?
Can we say that's the chicken and the egg who come first?
Yeah. It'll come like that. But the point is that it means the point goes back is, it's coming from that's the result of your karma. So the result the situations you're in, like here you're on Swarga, that's because of your previous action. So you can't just say, oh no, he's in Swarga, that's why he acts like a demigod, like that. But he's there because before that he did. But why did he before act in a way to try to get to heaven? That's because of, so it all goes back to that anadi karma of just he wants to control and enjoy. And so then you start off as Brahma, and then as Brahma you see the whole universe, so you see everything that's possible, and then from that you get attracted. And then, you know, it's downhill from there. To this, the author of the sutras applies as follows. Pradeshat iti chen nantara bhavat. Pradeshat, from the environment. Iti thus, chet, if, na, not, antar bhavat, because of being understood. If one proposes that difference in place gives rise to variety in jivas, the answer is no, because attaining those places depends on karma.
Sutta Pragashika. The Sutrakar refutes their proposal, attributing differences in jivas to different environments, since jivas in the same environment often manifest great differences. Sri Govindabhasya. Siddhanta, the answer is no, because attaining different places is included in karma, since attaining those particular places depends on karma. One also sees variety in jivas who are in the same place. Right? Footnote 48. Desire and hatred arise from the jiva's perception in situations in a certain place in a certain body. All endowed with a variety of gunas. The place, body, and circumstances are dictated by karma. Right, so they perceive, but why are they perceiving in that way? That's also from their karma. So it's a very complex thing. That's why you see is that when it gets down to it, then when Draupadi asks her a question in the court, even Bhishma Dev can't give an answer. Like that, because so many things are there. Right? But you at the same time is, you know, he's bewildered because of being supported by Duryodhana. So he takes on, you know, some of that mentality.
Usually when devotees they are miserable and they suffer, and then they say that, you know, it's because of our previous karmas and all. So instead of contemplating on this land, it's better to take shelter of Krishna.
Yes, it means you always take shelter of Krishna, even if it's coming from previous karma, where did that previous karma come from? So the point is that the only way to go beyond it is by surrendering to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. I mean, if you just say it's karma and don't do anything about it, that's another thing. Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference. 4:6:45. O auspicious Lord, you have ordained the heavenly planets, the spiritual Vaikuntha planets, and the impersonal Brahman sphere as the respective destinations of the performers of auspicious activities. Right? So these are for those who perform auspicious activities. Whatever else is left, that's for those who don't perform auspicious activities. Similarly, for others who are miscreants, you have destined different kinds of hells, which are horrible and ghastly. Yet sometimes it's found that their destinations are just the opposite. It is very difficult to ascertain the cause of this. Footnote 89. Srila Prabhupada comments, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called the Supreme Will. It is by the Supreme Will that everything is happening. It is said, therefore, that not a blade of grass moves without the Supreme Will. Generally, it is prescribed that performers of pious activities are promoted to the higher planetary systems. Devotees are promoted to the Vaikunthas, or spiritual worlds. And impersonal speculators are promoted to the impersonal Brahman effulgence. But it sometimes so happens that a miscreant like Ajamil is immediately promoted to the Vaikuntha Loka simply by chanting the name of Narayana. Although when Ajamil uttered this vibration, he intended to call his son Narayan. Lord Narayana took it seriously and immediately gave him promotion to Vaikuntha Loka, despite his background, which was full of sinful activities. Similarly, King Daksha was always engaged in the pious activities of performing sacrifice. Yet because of creating a little misunderstanding with Lord Shiva, he was severely taken to task. The conclusion is, therefore, that the Supreme Will is the ultimate judgment. No one can argue upon this. Right? Because the karma is controlled by Krishna. It's his laws. So we think we've done the activity, but it also depends on that body, mind, and words. So maybe externally you did the activity, if the mind is different, then it ends up in a different place. Right? It's like that. A pure devotee therefore submits in all circumstances to the supreme will of the Lord, accepting it as all auspicious. Nate dukam pam sukshami kshamano, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14:8. The purport of this verse is that when a devotee is in a calamitous situation, he takes it as a benediction of the Supreme Lord and takes responsibility himself for his past misdeeds. In such a condition, he offers still more devotional service and is not disturbed. Right? So he takes up more devotional service instead of giving up devotional service because I'm so disturbed, how can I do service? Or I've done service, what did I get materially, so therefore why should I do? Why should I practice transcendental activity to get me beyond the make me transcendental to the situations, but I'm going to give it up because it didn't give me material situations. Does that make sense? You know, it doesn't make sense. You know, it's like I'm going to give up eating because when I read the paper, you know, I wasn't satisfied.
It's like, what do the two got to do with each other? You know, so. One who lives in such a disposition of mind, engaged in devotional service, is the most eligible candidate for promotion to the spiritual world. Right? So one who lives in such a disposition of mind. So that means his mind, that's how he acts. Not one who has, but one who lives in that.
That makes sense?
Because you can have it, that's nice, but do you apply it? So living in it means you're applying it. Is the most eligible candidate for promotion of the spiritual world. Right? So this is 10th canto. Oh no, this is 4th canto. In other words, such a devotee's claim for promotion of the spiritual world is assured in all circumstances. Conclusion to Pada 3. The chief theme of disagreement entitled Brahman, Cause of Creation, between two groups is seen consistently reflected through the dialogue in the first and second adhyayas. Hence, Pada 3 is in correlation to this. Herein, Srila Vyasadeva refutes those who claim Bhuta are eternal and Jiva has an origin. Right? They're saying the material nature is eternal. Right? So it doesn't have any origin, but the Jivas, they have an origin. Right? So they have it completely backwards. This is the meaning of someone's in avidya. So we may have great scholars here, but the problem comes is that their scholarship is based on studying ignorance. Right? Even though they're studying the scriptures, which may be situated in transcendence, their approach to it and their vision, in other words, they're living, as it said, living in ignorance. So all their scholarship is applied to analyzing ignorance. And so that's why whatever they come up with, it comes up, it's strange. Right? Okay, so they claim this, that the Buddha are eternal and Jiva has an origin, to prove the conclusion in line with the Vedantic texts.
And we say that this is the function of the material world to study ignorance, because this is the main ignorance.
Yes, it's all about ignorance. Study ignorance, act in ignorance, live in ignorance, think ignorance, taste ignorance, be ignorant. It's like fabric. Yeah. If you have two threads and they're both ignorant, then your fabric is in ignorance. Yeah. But,
the only way is connecting with the parampara.
Yes, so only when you contact the chit potency, now you're dealing with transcendence. So it's not the scripture, it's not the activity. That's what has to be appreciated, is that the nothing becomes on a transcendental nature until it's connected to transcendence. And only bhakti can do that. And that means sampradaya bhakti, not the so-called what sahaji is and others do. So it has to be real. Then you're connected. The others, it's not. So yukta vairagya is to engage the material energy because it's Krishna's in his service. Therefore, it takes on the transcendental quality. But to think that it itself is useful in bhakti, that means one doesn't actually have proper knowledge. One engages in bhakti, then that's nice. But when we have a philosophy that because I'm a devotee, therefore automatically it's engaged, then sometimes it's very haphazard because it might be engaged, it might not, because we're not actually looking at the philosophy properly. The Pada opens up with the opponent's claim that ether, air, etc. are eternal. This is refuted on the grounds that elements have the quality of being created and destroyed, and that these elements are not atma, to be eternal. Right? Because whatever we see around us, you see it manifest, it's destroyed. That means behind that, then there is, it has its origin. While the jiva we see doesn't die, so therefore there's no origin. Thus, the elements have their origin in Brahman. Being so, the elements arise in a progression. Hence, this is a pick up on point by the opposition to rationale that in the process of creation, one element is the cause of another. What does pick up on point mean?
Yeah. They just want in that particular...
They just choose whatever they want. Okay. Yes. By the opposite... Okay. However, the Sutrakar rejects the reasoning showing that process of creation begins because of a conscious agent, the Lord. Only because of his desire and his shaktis, the gross elements manifest in succession. Hence, Brahman is both the material and efficient cause. Right? Because from the expansion of the energies of Brahman, you get all the material elements. And at the same time, those elements are empowered to act through Krishna, through Brahman's effulgence. I mean, through his energy. So he is the cause, he is the effect. The computation that everything has a cause for certain is used by the opponents, who declare that like everything else, Brahman too has a cause. This then is refuted by Srila Vyasa, that though everything unseen has a cause, however Brahman is without cause. Oh, everything seen, unseen, okay. Since he is being the root cause is the basis of all the successive causes and effects. The Sutrakar with the purpose to strengthen the Vedantist side, the Brahman is the material cause, the ingredient of creation, reintroduces an already discussed topic in the previous pada. Jai. In order to lay to emphasis that all names denote the Lord chiefly and otherwise secondarily, since he is being the cause of all causes, is by default the cause of all names in the world, moving and inert. Both moving and inert. Okay. So the primary names is him, because that's the origin of why it works. But the secondary is what you see here manifest, that itself, because that is the effect. It also has that you can call it by that name. Does that make sense? Yes.
This point is where the confusion comes from, because there are several causes for any action.
Yes.
But then one ingredient takes the credit and takes the karma for whatever happens.
Yes, because that one identifies with it.
Yeah.
While the one who's the cause doesn't. So it just is going on. The material, dead matter is transforming amongst itself. What does it matter? You know, I mean, what's the importance? Nothing. You know, so no one's disturbed, nothing's going on like that, right? But then what happens is that the living entity identifies with it, that this is me and mine. And so therefore, okay, yeah, if you want to, why not? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing. It's just like that's the. Yeah. So in other words, you give up that identification and identify with the Supreme, then that problem goes away. But then in doing so, the Vaishnavas maintain their individuality so that it can be appreciated, while the impersonalists, they give up that individuality and somehow or another expect that they'll appreciate it. So it doesn't make sense. Yeah, because they want to. You know, because if it's Brahman, Brahman's already doing. Why would Brahman be here unless Brahman wanted to be here? So therefore, then why are you complaining? Right? So they don't, it means they think a lot, but not in the right areas. Right? That. The Sutrakar with a purpose to strengthen the Vedanta side that Brahman is the material cause, the ingredient of creation, reintroduces an already discussed topic in the previous pada. In order to lay emphasis that all names denote the Lord chiefly and otherwise secondarily. Since he's been the cause of all causes, is by default the cause of all names in the world, moving and inert. This point nonetheless provides a momentum to the previous discussion that all the names and elements in the creation process are names of Brahman primarily. Right? So they're primarily Krishna's names. That's why they work, because he's the potency behind them. He is the effect, he is the cause, he's all these different things. So it's actually a name of him. Then from there, then it has other meanings. Does this make sense? Then when you apply it, then you're seeing Krishna's potency being manifest. Mm-hmm. So we call it that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And Maharaj, if we don't see him, we call another name.
Because then that's the whole point, is why everything can remind you of Krishna, because it all comes from Krishna.
Yes.
You know, it's like we said, table in Sanskrit means that which holds up off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But where's that potency to hold off the floor? That's Krishna. So Krishna is table.
Yes.
But when there's a table that's manifestable, we can appreciate the table. The tableness is Krishna. So we call this table because it manifests Krishna's nature as table.
Mm-hmm.
But it's his tableness that makes the table a table.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work? Yes, so that's the point, is you can see Krishna everywhere and everything. Like that.
And what others say about it? Will they say anything about it?
Are we worried about it?
No, because that's kind of very obvious.
It is very obvious. But the point is due to ignorance, they can't see the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have a saying, can't see the nose on the face?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. So. Okay, I think he's walked back and forth quite a few times.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.